along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts rubbing his own sweet song. Wake up, you sleepyhead, get up, get up, get out of bed, cheer up, cheer up.
Hello and welcome to the Red Robin Podcast, powered by Budget Ties Auto Centre and 360 Chartered Accountants, the independent Hawkins and Rovers podcast.
Hello and welcome to everybody who's tuning in East Hull and beyond. And thank you to the people who are watching the podcast live right now rather than watching that car crash rugby league game, which is taking place over in Wakefield at the moment. It's another jam-packed episode of the Red Robin Podcast Weekly. This week I'm joined by Steve Till, lifelong Rovers fan, and he's joining us to discuss all the latest going on at Craven Park. And I'll also be joined by Warrington fan and organiser of the Rugby League Record Keepers Club, Ian Ormston. He joins us later on in the podcast. He'll be joining us to talk about our encounter with the Warrington Wolves tomorrow and what the Rugby League Record Keepers Club is. Steve, it's great to have you on board for this episode. Great to see so many people already commenting. Matt Brady, Derek Barkham, good to see you guys over on YouTube. Steve, before we kick off though, and for the benefit of people who are listening on the podcast and won't be able to see you on the screen, over your left shoulder, you've got a picture, a kit, on the wall, a Hull Kingston Rovers kit. Is that right, Steve?
It is.
Tell us a bit more about what it is.
It's the kit that Mossy Massaw was wearing when he got injured. You can't see it, and obviously the podcast listeners can't see it, but anyone watching on YouTube, they had to cut the kit off him. And actually, it's got lots of safety pins. It's joined together by safety pins, but it's the final kit, and it was auctioned off at the leaving deal that the club gave Mossy. So I decided to buy it, and I also bought, if you can see it, there it is. That's the ball. A lot of Rovers fans will know, and St Helens fans, in fact, fans. This ball is signed by all the captains of the Australian NRL clubs. I think it was 22, just after he got injured. And it was flown over to St Helens, and then it was walked from St Helens to raise money, from St Helens to Hull, and Sean Kenny Darrell then signed it. I think Rovers were playing Castleford. But it's got all the signatures of all Tedesco, Proctor, James Tedesco, lots to Tuivasa Sheck, Josh Jackson, Dale Cherry Evans, lots of, all the Australian NRL skippers of that era. So yeah. We bought that to donate funds to Mossy. And I'm a proud owner of it. You can see just about it's got marks from of the mud. It was only on the field 11 minutes, but there's marks of the mud. And as I say, it's pinned together. It's a sad one as well, really.
I suppose it's a bit of sweet memorabilia.
I wish he hadn't been made available in a sense, because I wish he was still up and about. Yeah. But good luck to Mossy if anybody is in contact with him. I know that when I put a picture of it up on Twitter, he did like the picture. So, you know.
Yeah.
But mixed memories for him, obviously, in that I can see why he perhaps wanted to keep it.
No. And if you are listening, Mossy, we wish you all the best. And it is a unique piece of memorabilia there. And of course, very generous of you, Steve, to purchase it in the first place and donate some money to the foundation, because it's not easy for him, is it? But let's go on to matters at the moment. And Rovers, last time out, faced the Huddersfield Giants after the international break, Steve. 28-0 winners, 14-0 at half-time. Overall, Steve, my abiding memory of the game was pretty much how comfortable we looked in victory.
Absolutely. It's a long time since I felt that. And my memory is the defence. I thought the defence was magnificent. We defended every 10-yard line or 10-metre line. We didn't wait for them to get on top of us. We showed the same commitment in defence when we were 10 metres from their line as we showed when we were on our line. And we were on our line a couple of times, and they didn't look like scoring. So it truly was a comfortable success. And it came exactly a year to the day that they put us out the cup in the semi-final. Mm. And they were as emphatic then as we were last Friday. And who would have bargained on that happening?
No. And another thing that you probably wouldn't have bargained on, Steve, and that was the starting lineup for the Robin. We saw Dean Hadley line up at prop, and it's another call that probably nobody would have predicted, especially with Sao So Su returning. You know, we had a full quarter of regular starting props, our first choice props. And yet Hadley's made an appearance in the starting lineup at prop along with George King.
I did a double take when I saw that. You know, and I still couldn't believe it when they came on the pitch, you know. It was a surprise. But, you know, Willie knows the team and he knows what he wants and he plays to a plan. And if the plan involved, and he obviously is a great fan of Dean Hadley because, from the get-go, he's wanted Hadley in the team. And he's been proved right, and Hadley's not letting down, are they?
No, and he's fresher from a new contract deal. Willie Peter speaks very fondly of Dean Hadley. So, you know, he's making sure that Dean Hadley features in his side, and all credit to Dean because he's took his opportunity when many people, would have maybe thought about letting him go maybe at the end of last season or maybe not seeing Dean having a future at the club. And he's someone who's grabbed the opportunity with both hands. Something else that might not have been predicted, although I do wonder if he was carrying a knock into the game, was Lachlan Coote going off after 6 minutes with a hamstring injury. Subsequently, he's going to be injured and missing for the Robins for at least the next month. But that's not the kind of play you want going off at such an early stage in the game, Steve.
Yeah, he just, about 2 minutes before, he went off after 11 minutes. A couple of minutes before, he'd come down the right-hand side and he produced a bit of the Lachlan Coote magic. And I sat there and I thought, but he looks in good form. And then, obviously, the incident. And I've got to be honest, I thought he'd done a hamstring. And when they were patting the top of the heads to suggest HIA as he was being brought to the benches, I thought, well, I just noticed his leg had gone. It was, to me, it was a genuine hamstring injury. And to a couple of friends who were in the East Stand, they said the same. But then everybody was kind of deceived by the action of the physios patting the heads.
I think you're right, Steve. I think Rovers were probably a little bit naughty there because he pulled up right in front of me in the East Stand, and it was he wasn't holding his head, mate. He was holding his leg.
Yeah. And he limped off, you know. Yeah. So there was no question that, in my mind, I'm going to say it was only a hamstring. I was worried it might be a bit worse than that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and we'll come on to Lachlan Coote and his announcement that he's retiring from the game at the end of the current season. We'll come on to that later, Steve. Ryan Hall gets the first score of the game after a fantastic break from Elliot Minchella. Goes down the middle of the pitch, plays the ball. We see Matty Parcell pass it on to Litton. Litton kicks through for a little grubber kick. Ryan Hall gets on the end of it. Rowan Milnes goes and scores a penalty. He misses the conversion for the Ryan Hall try, but he scores a penalty. And then Ryan Hall's second try, Steve. I mean, talk about rolling back the ears. It was when I watched it back, Steve, the next day, I had to look at the screen again to make sure it went on fast forward because the way he was like Usain Bolt running down that wing.
It was reminiscent of a try he scored in when Huddersfield won the league, were going for the league leaders title. They were playing Leeds and in the very last run of the game that day, Ryan Hall came steaming down the wing and it was just reminiscent of that. But what joy, wasn't it, when, it was Jake O'Connor who gave him the assist. That was sheer joy. Jake O'Connor threw this time, he threw the wide pass and Ryan intercepted it. But can I just go back to the first try? That run from Minchella was magnificent. That burst through. And to be honest, by the end of the game, I'm thinking of him as man of the match. I thought he was absolutely outstanding on Friday night. And let's keep it up, you know. But as you say, there was that kick through from Jez Litton for Ryan's first try. But when Connor threw that ball, and then there was the see you later that he gave the centre, and then he was off. And people were saying, he won't make it. But, yeah,
there was nobody chasing him down. He's relentless with his pace. And it's interesting you mentioned there, Steve, about Elliot Minchella, because for me, he's becoming a linchpin of the side at the moment. He's so dependable. He's getting through so much graft. His tackle count, carries. He's making himself that 13 position, which is probably one of the reasons Dean Hadley is maybe featuring at prop, because he can't get in at second row and he can't get in at loose forward. So they're almost having to accommodate him somewhere in the team. But Elliot Minchella's form this season has been absolutely fantastic. And it's been building nicely over the last few years for him.
Yeah, I think he's a confidence player. And he's playing more and more confident. You know what? I could see him as being a future skipper of the team. You know, we'll talk about that, no doubt, later, who's going to be the next skipper. And I'd put his name forward because he's inspirational. And, you know, when he makes those kind of breaks, you know, the team lift. And that break he made, he played the ball and then the ball was quickly swung out. I think it was Jez, wasn't it, that put the little kick in and Ryan scored from. Perfect. Absolutely perfect. I just can't get over last Friday night. Like you said in the intro, how comfortable everything seemed, you know, and it just augurs well for the future.
Yeah, I mean, 14-0 lead at half-time. After the whole try, Milnes adds a further 4 points, the conversion, then another penalty. And at 14-0 at half-time as well, because of the weather conditions, I mean, Rovers looked really good. And you are waiting for this Huddersfield comeback, almost waiting for them to have a spell in the game. But it definitely didn't materialise. And James Batchelor goes in on 45 minutes, scores a try. Milnes converts. And at 20-0, Steve, I thought that was, see you later, good night. That, there's no way Huddersfield were coming back from that.
No, you know, in the past we've thought 20-0, it's Rovers, you never know. But we never looked like allowing them in for a try at all. It was all based on defence. This is the best Rovers team I've seen since about 1986. You know, it's certainly the best Super League side we've had. You know, we were talking after the match about players that in the team, like Ryan Hall. Is he the best winger we've had in Super League? I mean, somebody said to me, he's the best winger I've seen. Well, I've seen a lot, you know. But it's hard to find one better, even at his age, even after his career had been finished, you know, because that's what people were saying. He's coming back from Parramatta it was the Roosters, wasn't it?
Roosters, yeah.
Coming back from the Roosters and you know, we're buying an old man we're signing an old man whose career is almost over. And yet he's within less than 20 tries of the Super League try scoring record now. And I think he could do it this season, injuries permitted.
Yeah, he's definitely chasing it down. And people watching on Facebook and YouTube, good question posed by Steve there. Is Ryan Hall the greatest winger in our Super League era? Put it in your comments. Let us know what you think, because he's certainly up there. And I wouldn't bet against him not beating Danny Maguire's try record, because he's chomping at the bit to do that. I think my favourite try of the night, though, Steve, Ryan Hall's second was exquisite, but the Tom Opocic steal on Jake Connor, I mean, what an average fullback he's turned out to be. I mean, that performance against the Robins on Friday night, I mean, the amount of smoke that's been blown up his arse over the last couple of years, for me, he's one of the most average rated fullbacks, and he showed absolutely nothing. He's petulant, and you saw that in his performance. And I think Ian Watson called him out, or they didn't mention his name after the game when he mentioned some players need to wind the egos in a bit and get down and graft. And Opačić just picks his pocket after a kick through, and Opačić just showing, you know, if you've got desire and you want the ball, what you can do with that.
Second great assist, wasn't it, from Connor in the match? Two assists in the match, both for Rovers tries. Yeah, and Tom took it brilliantly, went over. And I just go back to when Connor was with the other side. I had workmates and they're saying you'd have him in your team. I would never have Connor in my team in a million years. And you know what? I don't think Sean Wayne ever would either. You know, they were talking about him being one of the England fullbacks. They were comparing him with Hardacre and Sam Tompkins at the time. He couldn't wipe the books.
No.
You know, he's just such an ego. Again, Minchella, people thought he might get a ban for flattening Connor. After Connor had kicked, I watched that. I followed play there, and Minchella didn't. He did nothing illegal, and Connor laid on the ground and tried to get him binned or banned. And that's grub. That's a grubby thing to do, and he does it all the time.
Yeah. People, and of course, we saw Minchella as well get inside Connor's head in the last game of last season, didn't we? And we saw what an effect that had on Connor and his performance. And you know what? I think Rovers have found him out. I think, you know, he's not a player that anybody should fear. So credit to the Robins and Elliot Minchella again, you know, having a big impact. And, you know, if he had a copped a ban and even a fine, I'd have been setting up a crowdfunding page to pay his fine, because it was definitely one worth taking. And luckily it didn't cost us by any sin binning during the game.
That's right.
But no, Batchelor as well, he scores two tries. I mean, another fantastic performance from him. And in the end, Rovers 28 points to zero winners. What really impressed me though, Steve, was the way that Mikey Lewis slotted in at fullback, the way that Jez Litton came in to the halves and partnered Roy Milnes. And again, we're going to come on to Roy Milnes later on, but I thought he had a really assured performance. We saw it, some short kicking game. We saw him, he showed up in defence. He made threats, two tackles, which you don't want one of your halves doing, but he definitely helped the team out. And I just thought the three of them, the spine, along with Parcell, who, of course, played minutes longer than what he'd normally do, because obviously he didn't have Jez Litton there as a foil. I just thought the spine really, really showed Huddersfield up and dominated the game and with a bit of adversity as well.
Yeah. I'm going to go back again a little bit. Ryan Hall. The Huddersfield kickers, they kick to Ryan Hall all the time. We've got Mikey Lewis gone to fullback. Not that experienced at fullback. Not that experienced at that level of taking continuous bombs. And what do Huddersfield do? The kick to Ryan Hall. Mm. You know, it was like shelling peas for him. And yeah, Rovers' span was magnificent. Everything, you know, it's as near to a perfect game as I've ever seen Rovers produce last Friday. As near to a perfect game. We nilled them, so the defence was perfect. We scored 28 points. Could have been a few more with goal kicks. You know, and given the adversity that we faced during the game, you know, was put in our faces during the game, I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was absolutely magnificent.
Yeah, there was, and it was reflected in the team of the week. Rovers having three players in there: Elliot Minchella, James Batchelor, and Ryan Hall. Ryan Hall was the sponsor's man of the match on Friday night. It'd be very difficult to argue with there. You look across the stats. One player who's people are still scratching their head at a little bit and sort of questioning, but I think there's a very good player in there, Rhys Kennedy. One carry, 5 meters, 11 tackles. Obviously, when you've got five props lining up in the squad, the competition is going to be very fierce. Matty Stoughton was 18th man. People will be wondering whether he might come in for him tomorrow night against Warrington. But when you look across the team, one player who's not really got a mention, Steve, and he showed up again and did really well was Corey Hall as well. I think he's the way he's come into the side and the way that he's keeping Sean Kennedy on the right wing rather than his favoured left centre, he's magnificent. And you know, he's already exceeded expectations about what he could have brought to the side so early on.
Yeah, I mean, it was going to be kind of eased into the team. I can't see him getting dropped. He's international class. He's an athlete through and through. Do you remember the game against Saints when Opoati kind of strode through for their first, to produce their first try? That's Corey Hall. He's as good, if not better, than Opoati. He's got that sleekness about him. He's got that edge to him. He's got that swerve. He's probably got a great step. And, you know, once he kind of he's established now, but what more and more experience playing with these lads on a drier surface. Remember, we've had rain for the last six Friday night matches. It's absolutely persisted it down. And once they get on a dry track, it's going to take some beating,
Yeah, it's a great point as well, because the weather conditions were atrocious. And you only have to look at the contribution of, we've already mentioned Dean Hadley, an average gain of 9 metres, 113 metres from 13 carries. And King.
One more player who played the full 80 minutes and never let us down again, Kane Lynette. We've not mentioned Kane Lynette, and yet he's had a fantastic game again. Played the full 80 minutes, tackled relentlessly. Do you know, there's a pal of mine mentioned with Kane Lynette, he's not been on the losing team with Rovers this season. Although he played against Lee, Rovers were winning when he went off against Lee. Kane Lynette's not been on a losing team with Rovers this season. That's a fantastic record.
Yeah, it does. He has a huge influence. And George King, Mikey Lewis and Jez Litton, keeping up their record of being the only ever present players this season. Three real linchpins of the side there, three really dependable players, just like Kane Lynette is. Fantastic victory, Steve. I mean, we move on to Warrington tomorrow night. Prior to that, though, we've had there's lots and lots of goings on. We've seen made affairs come and go, which means that players who were out of contracts at the end of the season are now able to speak to clubs, and clubs are able to speak to them. Very recently, we just saw that Sean Kennedy-Dowell, the captain, will not be offered a new contract. Nothing official has come out from the club yet, but he's not on the retained list, which obviously alludes to the fact that he won't be offered a new contract. Sean Kennedy-Dowell, he's going to be eulogised probably towards the rest of the season. But what a fantastic contribution he's made to the Red and Whites, and what a fantastic contribution he continues to make.
Yeah. He's lost that yard of pace. He's 30 odd. We talk about Ryan Hall going 100 metres on 95 metres. Could Sean Kennedy-Dowell do it? I don't think so. Even when he wasn't flavour of the month when he first came, I always liked him. I've always thought he's a class player. And, but time catches up. And you've got to be ruthless in the game now, and Rovers are being ruthless, and it's sad that it probably doesn't want to go, and there's rumours abounding in the town. I don't think he'll go to the dark side, to be honest, because they're talking about, and you're going to mention this player later, Sam Wood. They're talking about Sam Wood. Why would they sign Sean Kennedy-Dowell if they're going to sign Sam Wood? It just doesn't gel. Whether they do it out of spite, whether they offer him something on the coaching front and do it out of spite. Because what you've got to remember as well, I don't know how old Sean Kennedy-Dowell's kids are, but they're at school in England. Are they at a stage at school where they don't want, they're reaching a crucial stage at school where going back to Australia or New Zealand might break their school, their education up? We don't know. So does Sean Kennedy-Dowell want to stay in England? another year? And was he hoping that Rovers would keep him? We don't know. We're not into the ins and outs of that. But that can have a bearing on a player as well.
Without doubt. And it all come out in the wash. And whether he's seeking a contract elsewhere or whether he decided his time's up. I mean, he's still our second top meter maker this season. Obviously, he's now in the out on the right wing, partnering Tom Opacic. Corey Hall, like we've already mentioned, keeping him out from that left centre. Again, he's a player, though. He's not in the background. He's a player who's probably one of the first on the team sheet. And I can understand why Willie Peters has done everything to maintain his place in the side by playing him on the right wing. Some people, Steve... Go on, Steve.
He's not just playing on the right wing. He's playing on the right side because he often comes into centre.
Mm.
It depends, defence, attack, where they are on the pitch. You often see him swap with Opacic. I mean, and I'm certain he'll give, his usual 100% for the rest of the season. That's why he's captain.
Yeah, and there's no doubt that he's one of our best Super League overseas recruit. Where would you put him in our all-time overseas recruitment?
I liked a lot of the Morgan era overseas players, but I'd put him up there, top five. Top five. But I was a great fan of a lot of the lads that, Mickey Vella and Mick Wayman and people like that. Clint Newton. He rates alongside all them for me.
Yeah, and like you said, Steve, people forget that he did endure a difficult start to his career at the Robins.
Yeah, the fans didn't take to him straight away. It was difficult, wasn't it? Because it was in the COVID era. And
yeah.
Playing to empty stadiums and, things like that. But he certainly, when he was made skipper, I think he was made skipper the second season, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Once he took that responsibility on, the fans began to change the views on him. And he forced the fans to change the views on him. He's a bloody classy player, and his class showed, And so if anyone was critical of him then, well, they were out of order,
Yeah, and his leadership qualities and what he does in and around the club shines through. He has such an influence on the side, and he must be a coach's dream. We don't know what he's going to be doing yet. I'm sure it'll come out over the next few weeks. We don't know whether he's going to keep playing, whether he's going to move on to somewhere else, whether he's going to retire. One player we know what he's definitely doing at the end of the season is Lachlan Coote. He announced his retirement from the game. Of course, we've already mentioned he's going to be missing for the Robins for at least the next month due to a hamstring injury. I suppose Lachlan Coote, Steve, a real Rolls Royce of a player. We've seen, we've seen him produce some magic for the Robins on a number of occasions during his time here, and he's wanting to go out on one last high. He's been a fantastic servant to the game, and every club he's been at, he gets plaudits from, and it's understandable. He seems like a really nice guy, someone who leads the side, someone who can be relied upon. It's just a shame now he's getting to the back end of his career, Steve, that he's picking up these injuries that are keeping him out.
Yeah, but again, it's age, isn't it? As you get older, you get injured and it's harder to recover. I think he's going at the right time because it's not just, we've got the hamstring at the moment, but I'd be worried about the head injuries he's received. And I think he knows that. And magnificent player, an absolutely magnificent player. At St. Helens, I liked him, and when he signed for Rovers, I was so pleased. I was so pleased that we were in for someone as good as him. And yeah, he was coming towards the end of his career, but I'll tell you what, he's not let us down, has he? Not let us down at all. And he's not let anybody down when he was playing for Scotland, whether he was playing for, is it the Cowboys? He played
yeah.
For Penrith as well. Every club, I noticed the Cowboys put a tweet out this week talking about him and saying, that he's retired and wishing him good luck. That's a real honour, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And three more players who were set to leave the Robins. You've already mentioned Sam Wood. He's not been offered a contract. Jimmy Kynehurst and Ethan Ryan. I know Mark Brady, he comments, not happy with Ethan Ryan going. What's your thoughts? My thoughts are, I think at the start of the season, there was a little bit of fragility there, weren't there? Some of his defensive players wasn't what was expected. It's really hard to comment on when players depart because you don't know who's coming in, do you? You don't know who the replacement is. So until you see that and you get the full picture, you can't quite quantify whether it's good or bad. But what you would say is Ethan Ryan is another player who's forged a career at the Robins, and he's produced some real stellar moments in the red and white. And who can, you know, we're talking about Lachlan Coote, who can forget that break Ethan Ryan did on the Good Friday at Craven Park when he ran, you know, 45 metres and released Coote for the try against the Black and Whites. Sad to see him go, Steve.
Yeah, I think he's one of the unlucky ones. Oh, well, I think he is unlucky. I'm hoping his defence is good for the next few weeks, because he's going to be in that fullback spot for the next few weeks. He's going to Salford. They've got a good player. Like you say, it's what we get to replace him. That's the key. The other player you mentioned, Jimmy Kynehurst, I've always been a fan of Jimmy Kynehurst, even at, you know, when he was at Leeds. He was 100% player. Might not have had all the skills that a lot of players had, but I'll tell you what, he never let a team down. He was always, the effort was always there. And I'll never forget the try, last minute try he scored against our bitter rivals from across the town to win that game. But going back to Ryan, Ethan Ryan, there's just a bit of, I don't know, fragility there, in that you couldn't necessarily 100% rely on him taking those high balls in the way you perhaps can Ryan Hall and others. He's just unlucky. But what I am pleased about is that he knows where he's going now. He's going to Salford, and he's joining a few ex-Robins at Salford. You know, Bradford say they're the team we go to when we want good players. Well, we seem to be the team that Salford go to for their good players, you know. Yeah. And I'm pleased that he's got a bit of stability there. He knows what he's doing, so he can settle down now. And he's going to have a few games for Rovers now.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not a big fan, Steve, of with us already talking about next season when we're only just a third of the way through this season. But when the business is done early, it gives players that security. It gives them the confidence. Like you said, Ethan Ryan, he knows he's going to Salford. He's going to get a run of games now due to injuries. He's got that security of having a contract at the end of it. And these players will want to go out on a high. They're part of a playing group who seems to be well-connected, good friendships, and very professional. And it's a feature of the club at the moment, isn't it? How they seem to be going about the business very professionally.
Yeah, I saw the interview with Tom Opacic that was on earlier in the week, and he emphasised that the players meet each other, the Australian contingent, their wives mix together. It's a good feeling. We've played every team now. We've had 11 matches. We've beaten both last season's grand finalists. We've beaten both last season's Challenge Cup winners. How many points are we on? 16. So if we were to repeat what we've done over the second part, forget the loop fixtures, that's 32 points. And then there's the loop fixtures. And it's all auguring well for the rest of the season, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, although understandably fans are getting a bit worried, especially with when three of our spine players being injured. Neil is waiting in the wings, so I'm going to bring him into the podcast now. Neil, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. Hi, Jono. Hi, Steve. Hi, everyone.
Brilliant. Thanks for joining us tonight, Neil. Obviously, massive game tomorrow, Hulkington Rovers versus the Warrington Wolves. It's really exciting. I'm really looking forward to it. I know Steve's travelling over. I'm travelling over for the game. And we've got quite a decent record at Warrington over the last few years. So there's definitely no trepidation in the way the Robins are playing. Is really good at the moment. But before we come on to that, Neil, you're also the organiser of the Rugby League Record Keepers Club. Some people will be aware of it, some people won't. What is it?
Yeah, so in my spare time, the little I have, I do organise the work of the Record Keepers, like you said. So the Record Keepers is an organisation. It's a group of statisticians and historians. And we're trying to share the history of the game through the course of the last 100 and whatever we're on now, 127, 28 years. So sharing all the stats relating to the games that have been played in that era of rugby league. So we've got our website, rugbyleaguerecords.com. And on there, you'll see match details for all of the summer era so far. So that's what we've got on there right now. So you'll see lineups, scorers, all of the detail, the kind of key information of all of those matches. And what our plan is to take that right the way back to 1895. And we're starting a process just now where club by club, we're going to load on those historic records. So fairly soon, probably at a point this year, hopefully, Rovers will go on there and you'll be able to see all of those historic games. Be it cup finals or first game that you went to, and go back as far as you want to see all the history of individual clubs, individual players, all of that information's on there. So that's the project, if you like. That's the piece of work that we're doing, and that's what I help to kind of coordinate and organise.
Neil,
I wish the Rovers one would have been shown last week, because if I can just digress slightly, that match last week was exactly 100 years to the day that Rovers won the first ever Rugby League Championship. Up till then, 1923 it was. Then it had been the Northern Union.
Northern Union, yeah.
And we became the first. And do you know who we beat that day? We beat Huddersfield. 100 years to the day that we beat them again.
And we do have the results for all the games on, going right the way back to 1895. So we've not got the full details of all the matches on, but every single match that's been played, every single first-class match of rugby league in this country is on the website now. So there's over 70,000 matches, I think it is, in total. So the basic details of that game will be up there at least. So date and score and that sort of thing. But the full details, lineup, scorers and things like that, that takes a little bit more time for us to get up, and is a huge task, both to manage the data flow on it, but more importantly, I think, check the accuracy. That's something that we're really priding ourselves on. We've got experts from respective clubs who know their own teams inside out, and they're doing a huge amount of work behind the scenes now. We'd love to be able to kind of launch everything all in one go, but it takes a long time to sort a club out, and a long time to connect the players as they move between clubs. So that's the biggest challenge that we've got now, is as we're going back in time, you know, we're going to end up with 100 John Smiths in there, and connecting the movements between different players and different clubs is the big challenge we've got. So we're being quite meticulous in the way that we do that, because we want the data that's freely available for people to be as accurate as it possibly can be. So we ask for a bit of patience on that, but the information's coming, and it's coming fairly thick and fast right now.
Neil, it's a mammoth task. I mean, how many people will volunteer at the moment to be a part of it and help out? And if people did want to help out and get involved, how can they do it?
Yeah, we've got just about 300 members now who have signed up, and anybody can join. There's no obligation on anybody to actually contribute in any direct way. It's £5 for the year to join, so it's cheap as chips, really. That helps us keep the website free, so there's no annoying adverts or anything like that on there. Everybody's doing the work voluntarily. So if anybody wants to help out, we're always looking for people to volunteer and that sort of thing. But yeah, your £5 membership gets you access to the archive of the original Record Keepers Club material. So the original Record Keepers Club ran from the 1970s up to the 1990s, and they created the records that we're now digitising. So there's a lot of old handwritten sheets. There's about 2,500 pieces of paper that we've scanned in. That's all available on website, on the website for members only at the moment. That's kind of sat behind the scenes. But that's the work that we're looking to load up into the database, and that then forms the main records that the public can kind of see freely there. So your fiver is helpful in kind of keeping the website free for everybody else. But you do get a bit of a perk in terms of access to some stuff there behind the scenes. You get regular updates from me as well on how the work's progressing. And also a chance then, if you want to help out. So we ask for people volunteering sometimes, checking information, typing information up, cross-referencing things, that sort of stuff. We keep the information live on a week-to-week basis. And that's done by a team of about just over 30 people who are doing that. So it's great that those guys are freely giving their time. But it means that usually by Tuesday, Wednesday of each week, we've got a full record of all of the previous weekend's matches up there. And that's all the games now that we're covering, all the formats as well. So as well as the men's game, we're covering the women's in the wheelchair this year for the first time. So we're really looking to create a comprehensive record of the top tiers of the sport in this country. And we've got a bit of work to do to kind of go back in time on the wheelchair and the women's. So if anybody's got a particular interest in that, it'd be great to kind of see people joining to support with that work. So yeah, there's no obligation for people to kind of help out. If you just want to browse a website, then that's great as well. But more than happy always to welcome new people into the fold, especially if someone's keen to support with checking information and that sort of stuff.
Neil, it's fantastic work you're doing, and honestly, it's probably underappreciated how much effort goes into it and how hard it is to fact check and make sure you get the details right, etc. But obviously, you're preserving the history of rugby league. You know, you've got at your fingertips so much data and so much information. So thank you for on behalf of me anyway, for doing that, because honestly, if it weren't people like you and the rest of the volunteers, a large chunk of the game would be gone, and people just miss out on it. And it's vital work. And the fact that you're now going into the women's game, disability, et cetera, it's fantastic to see. But before we go on to the Warrington game tomorrow, what's your favourite stat?
I'm probably boring people when they're talking this one, because I always get asked this one. It's got to be Bevan's try record. I'm a Warrington man, so I would say that. But I think of all of the scoring stats that there is around, I think it's nice and easy for people to appreciate the enormity of it. I think when you see him out there on 796 tries he scored over his career, it's just an astonishing number. And it's such a relatable one, because people can kind of keep it, you know, people quote complicated stats sometimes and obscure facts, but that's as simple as you get. Who scored the most tries ever?
And if anyone's following you on social media, Neil, the Rugby League Record Keepers Club, you know, you're almost doing a running total on Ryan Hall's tries.
I was going to give him a mention then as well. He is now riding high. He's in elite company. And it's one of the things I'm enjoying kind of sharing those updates for people, because, again, it puts – one of the modern day great players in a historic context. And I think that's something that we've lost quite a bit recently. Since the original Record Keepers Club finished and the Rothmans yearbook was a kind of Bible and a go-to for people, that kind of coincided with the transition to summer. And two things happened. Those two factors led to something happening, which was quoting Super League records and summer era stats. And I think we lost something as part of that. So people quote the likes of Maguire's Super League record, that sort of thing. But we lose the historic context, and you stop talking. There's a risk that you stop talking about the Bevans and the Rosenfelds and the Coopers and the whoever's, you know, the Affairs of the world in more recent time, just because they didn't quite transition into that summer era. So I think it's great that you've got a player like Ryan Hall, who's now pushing up into there. So I'm sure people know, but for anybody that doesn't, Hall's now got over 300 tries in the British game. And there's only 31 players done that. 31 players that have done that. And Hall's now joint 28th on the all-time list with James Lomas, who was the first Northern Union, or Great Britain, as we'd call it now. He was the first captain back in 1910. So, you know, you can see how a player like Hall is kind of relating to those guys that have gone previously and laid the foundations for the game. And for me, that's really important. And it's important that there's stories and there's narratives that people can tell and find out about the history of the game through seeing that. And then people will jump on to, oh, who is James Lomas? Let's see who he is. And, you know, that's how I've kind of learned the history of the game, just through seeing facts like that. And then, oh, let's investigate them. And there's a really rich history to the game that's a little bit undersold, I think, sometimes. Clubs are getting better at celebrating their heritage. But if we can help play a small part in bringing that to a wider audience and relating that to the modern game as well, then hopefully that's something that we can do.
Can I bring another player in? Top point scorer?
Neil Fox.
Fantastic. Ex-Rovers.
Yes.
You know, you could play... A player could play now for 20 years and not reach what Neil Fox has reached.
No, so Fox got, what, 6,220 points?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, there's not many players going to score 300 points in a season. You'd have to go at that rate for 21 years to get to the level that he got to.
To get to that.
And see how many players score 300 points this year. It's going to be a very, very small number, if any. So, yeah, you can see the achievements of those guys in that context. They were playing more games a season, to be fair, but...
But the players are having longer. The try was only worth 3 points in those.
Yes,
things.
Yeah, that's a good, very good point. That cost him a 150, 200 points or so, I guess. In modern currency, anyway. But yeah, it's interesting because I think you're seeing, James Roby. Obviously, people might be quite well aware will break Saints' record this weekend, assuming he plays. Another one to kind of relate in a historic context. He'll break Coslett's record for most appearances ever for a Saints player. And you're seeing players have longer careers now, not just in rugby league, but in all sports. You know, advances in sports science and conditioning, that sort of thing, is allowing players to have longer careers. So whilst you're not necessarily going to see the Foxes and the Bevans of the world threatened at the top of those charts, you know, there's opportunities for players if they play a full career in this country. You know, players can have 15, 18, 20-year careers now. So with a good rate of scoring, as you've got a Hall has done, then you are going to see players who might be able to kind of sneak in there. Josh Charnley's not too far behind as well. So if he can keep running them in at the rate that he has been doing this season now, he's been rejuvenated at Lee. He'll be, I think he's on about 270-odd now, so... you know, give him another season or two and he could well be pushing that 300 club. So it's great to kind of see and be able to, like I say, relate that to the history of the game and bring some of that to life for people.
Right, let's bring it right up to the present day then, Neil. Hull Kingston Rovers v Warrington tomorrow evening. Warrington Wolves, the current Super League leaders. Fantastic start of the season, tempered slightly by the two losses to Wigan and St Helens. Top try scorers, top goal scorers, top meter makers, the most clean breaks, most tackle busts. Where are Warrington at now, Neil, after them two defeats and a bit of a laboured victory over Wakefield?
I think we're in pretty good shape. I think we're okay. I always talk a lot about, and people generally talk a lot about momentum. They tend to talk about that in the context of games, but I think momentum over the course of a season is important as well. You guys are massively benefiting from that now. You know, you've really got some momentum behind you, as we had at the start of the season. And once you get that, it creates that flywheel effect, and it's, you know, you can keep that going, and that kind of fuels you and gets you through some tough times. We had that momentum stopped. You know, Wigan clipped our wings at our place, and then, you know, we kind of stalled and underperformed the next week against Saints, and you know, we Saints had plenty of players out as well, but both against Wigan and Saints, you know, we were struggling in one particular position, which is the position that's, you know, down the middle of the park, that's really laid the platform for us this season. We got most of those guys back against Wakefield, bit scratchy. But it was a game where we were always playing in second gear, and it was close for a while. But I don't think anybody was too concerned that we were going to lose that match, to be fair. It felt like we kind of nursed our way through the match. And just making sure we got over the line was the important thing. I'm massively looking forward to tomorrow. I think it's a really good matchup between two teams that are playing quite well. Probably really well in your case, well in our case, with maybe that little dip that you've mentioned. But, you know, the game at your place earlier in the year was really, really close. Could have gone either way. Thankfully, Coop mucked that kick up, and then we managed to just kind of go down, and Vaughan got over at the end just to maybe, you know, give the score a bit of an unfair reflection probably on how the match was. You know, I don't think we necessarily felt we got away with one there. I think we probably on balance deserved the win just, but it was a really, really close game. And I'm expecting something pretty similar tomorrow, to be fair. I think they're two very evenly matched teams. Your full value for your position where you are at the moment, as I think we are as well over the course of the 11 games that we've had. So yeah, it's a definite fair shout for a 1v3 at the moment. I think both teams are full value for where they are, and that bodes well for a good match, I think.
Steve, do you carry that confidence into the game? I mean, we're missing Lachlan Coote, we're missing Jordan Abdul, we're missing Jordan Abdul's replacement in Rowan Milnes, which means we're going to have to bring Jez Litton in, which means that we're probably not going to have cover in the hooker position. So we're making some fundamental changes to the side going into this fixture. Although what I would say is that any point this season where players have come in to replace injured or suspended players, they've fitted in seamlessly, which is why I think there's an air of confidence about the Robins going into this game.
Yeah, I'll tell you where we're not missing players, in the pack. I think that pack battle tomorrow night is going to be awesome. I really do. I think you've got Vaughan and you've got Cassiano. Is he playing?
I haven't double checked the squad. I haven't heard that he isn't. So
yeah, he's in the squad.
No reason to think he's not.
And Josh Maguire, you've got a massive pack. And if we can get on top of your pack, I know that we're missing some of the spine, but you know we still haven't got a bad pair of halfbacks, and the halfbacks operate on the back of what the pack do. So if we can get on top of your pack and stop Williams and Drinkwater getting any kind of good ball from the pack, so I think we've got a chance. You know, I think we've got a hell of a chance. Our three quarters are where we are, and yeah, it's a massive game. But I think the key to it is the forward battle.
Yeah, Neil, I mean, Vaughan, one of the standout performers in the early part of the season. Although if you went on the Super League Match Centre, you wouldn't know he existed because they missed off his stats for some inexplicable reason, as they did with Jesse Sue. Absolutely unbelievable. Is it, has he sort of slowed down now he's got a new deal, or is he keeping going?
He wasn't quite as red hot last week, but I say I think there was a bit of measuring effort there, to be honest. I think the big miss for us, and he's not been mentioned a great deal, to be fair, is McKaylee. He was really good at your place. You guys probably saw a pretty solid performance from him, and he scored a cracking try that day as well when he, with a barnstorm, typical kind of barnstorming prop try. We've missed him. I think him with Vaughan was a really, really effective combo to then bring Cassiano off the bench. Harrison's beat since he's come back probably hasn't been quite as effective. He's only had a couple of games back. He had the England game as well in the middle of that as well. But he's probably not quite hit the height that he did in the first month or so. I think that Vaughan was benefiting from having some really, really solid performers around him. Harrison, McKaylee, Cassiano specifically. You know, that helped him kind of shine, and he was definitely the star out of those early doors. Since we've kind of lost a bit of momentum on that front with McKaylee going, Harrison being injured, you know, we had a few suspensions as well. That's our own doing, so you can't complain about it, but that didn't help the situation. That was what caused our undoing in the Wigan and Saints games fundamentally. You know, we didn't have those middles playing. And we very much based our game on dominating in the middle. And then Williams is the best half in the competition by a distance, I think. And I'm including the likes of Croft and Abdul and other people in there. He's head and shoulders above any other half in the competition. With him playing behind a dominant pack, you're always going to be in with a very, very good chance. But that pack needs to be dominant. And we've been at our best, clearly, when the pack's got on top. So I think Steve's absolutely right. If one of the packs can get on top tomorrow, that's going to stand whoever does that in very good stead for a victory, I think.
Yeah, and Steve, are you expecting a straight swap between Ethan Ryan and Lachlan Coo and then Jez Litton and Rowan Mills? You expect them to come into the side? Or because we've seen Willie Peters isn't afraid to move people about and you know throw a few curveballs in there in terms of his team selection.
That'd be a massive curveball if he didn't keep it, as you've just suggested. I don't see where else we could go. Will he put PLT in? I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, my team, as I've written it out, would be Ryan, SKD, Opacic, Corey Hall, Ryan Hall, Mikey Lewis-Litton, Hadley, Parcel, King, Batch, Linnett, and Elliot Minchella. And again, you've got Jesse Sill, Luckley, Stoughton, and I don't know, maybe one other from the 21 as the fourth benchman. I can't. Yeah, you know, that's my team, and we'll match Warrington. Like you say, I think Paul Vaughan's magnificent. I think he's been your man in your first 11 run. You know, up to getting suspended, I thought it was magnificent. McKayley, well, what happened, you know, he probably did link up with Vaughan in terms of being the humph behind everything. Maguire, how's he been playing?
He's been okay. He's flown a little bit under the radar, obviously, with him. You know, he kind of timed his return at maybe not the greatest point as well. He missed the first seven, which we won all of them. Thankfully, we won when he debuted in Catalan. I was a bit worried that he was going to come back and we were going to lose and then go on a bit of a losing run. He at least won his first match, but then we did lose a couple after that. He's been all right, I think. He's been, not spectacular. But then he's a different type of player than Vaughan. He's not necessarily... Vaughan, don't get me wrong, I think Vaughan's been great for us. And I'm very happy that he's in the team. He is one of those players, though, because the main part of his game is his go forward and his strong carries and meters after contact. He's going to be noticed more by opposing fans, I think. You tend to notice, I always think, on opposition teams, the players who make the breaks, the players who, make the stronger carries like he does. You maybe don't notice somebody like a Maguire quite so much. I think home fans can tend to appreciate those grafters a little bit more. And I put Maguire more in the grafter camp. He's not had anywhere near as much impact and he's probably been a little bit off, I think, in a few of the things that he would have wanted to do. He's going to be a solid performer, I think, for us. But he's not going to shine in the way that Vaughan is simply because they're different players.
I may have dreamt this. Did I see an advert suggesting those two were getting in the ring together, Maguire and Vaughan?
No, I think you have very odd dreams, Steve. If that's what you're dreaming of,
I don't know.
I think they were doing a thing for Ben Curry's testimonial, centered around a state of origin, New South Wales v Queensland thing with them having represented the respective states at points in time. So I think there was something on earlier this week about that. But I don't think they were fighting. Hopefully they weren't fighting. Not that we were a big
fan. That's what I thought. You know, it was kind of marketed as though it was going to be a boxing match.
I've not heard that they came to blows at the event, so I think we've got away with that one.
Okay, yeah. can I mention Curry?
Yes.
And, I mean, he again, he's another, veteran now. Wrong there. But no. He'll have a big impact as well, won't he?
Yeah, and he's playing down that left edge where Williams is predominantly taking up camp as well this year. So he's benefiting from that for sure. And then, you know, we've typically had kind of Ashton on the end of that. So that's been working quite well down that side. I love Steph Ratchford at centre down that side. There were a few eyebrows raised and questions. Why is Ratch at centre? Is that his best position? You know, people questioning whether he'd go well there. I've thought of him as being primed for centre for quite a few years, actually. I don't think his rate of involvement is quite high enough to play in one of the pivot positions. I mean, we had him out of fullback last year, but I think for me, he's better in those kind of edge situations, and he gets a little bit more space to kind of create a bit there. And I think that's working quite well down that side. Curry was probably one who started the season stronger and has then maybe faded a little bit in the last few weeks as well. But he's a class player, I think, Curry. And yeah, I think he's right to kind of, he's having his testimonial. So I guess that earns him the stalwart kind of tag now. So I don't think he'd complain if he heard that one thrown about.
Who'll be your fullback?
Well, it's an interesting one because I was quite pleased to see Dufty drops last week, apart from the fact he's in my fantasy team, so that knackered up my score. He was poor against Saints, and I thought it was Powell showing again that he's not going to pussyfoot around with players as he did last year and kind of stood firm, and I think that's paid dividends as we come into this season. So yeah, he benched him last week against Wakey and put Thulis in there. I was surprised Thulis got, everybody seemed to rave about him. Maybe I was in a minority, but I mean, he scored a couple of good tries early on, took that chance well, ended up winning the home man in a match, players player in a match, I believe as well, picked up the full 3 points in the Man of Steel. But he dropped a couple of easy balls. Was shocking in defence for one of Wakey's tries. Did his best to seemingly jump out of the way of making any tackle. So, you know, the thought of him facing Abdul this week was pretty terrifying. Now, neither of them are going to face him, which is quite helpful. I can't believe he would have left Thulis at fullback if Abdul had been playing, because he'd have just got bombed to death. Dufty's safer under the kick. So would have been a better option in that situation and probably a little bit more of a mature head to kind of deal with that pressure. Now that Abdul's not playing,
he'll still take a lot of bombs, because Mikey Lewis, I mean, obviously Ron Milne's not there now, but Mikey Lewis and Litton can
yeah,
you know, throw off you.
Yeah, yeah, maybe doesn't quite come with a fear factor, I guess. I think it was a shot across the bows for Dufty. Don't think you can come and just cruise your way through and earn a bit of a pension here. I think Powell was making a bit of a statement with that move. Dufty's the better fullback for me. I think that he, personally, I would start with him there. Possibly keep Thulis on the bench, actually, because I think Matty Russell gives us more coming out of the backfield in early in sets. There's no way you can drop Ashton. So I would go with Thulis, either not in a team or not in a squad or purely on the bench. But I think he's one of those situations where you've got a young guy who I think you can see sticking around for a long time. How do you kind of keep him happy now that he's got to the point where, you know, he was 18th man for England? And I know it was more of an England Knights team than a full England team, but still, you know, now that he's at that level, how do you kind of keep him happy? Despite the fact that he's probably not the best fullback, he's not the best fullback for me in the team. I don't think he's in the best two wingers. I'd go with Russell ahead of him personally. But clearly, you know, you need to kind of keep him interested so he doesn't start throwing his toys out of the pram. So that's part of the challenge that Powell's got, I guess, which is a good one to have.
Neil, I really appreciate your input. It's been fantastic to get an insider's view on the game tomorrow, and you just whet the appetite even more, because I'm sure it's going to be a really interesting encounter. I know our bookies have put Warrington as firm favourites for the match tomorrow, but I see it being much closer than that, and I can see it being decided by a try or a kick. I think it's going to be a really close game, and I'm really excited and looking forward to see the spectacle that's shown up. If you are travelling to the game, or you're in the car now and you're heading to Warrington and you're listening to us on the way up there, make sure that you play your part in cheering on the Robins and play your part in hopefully bringing the 2 points over to East Hull. Neil, Steve, thank you so much for joining us on this week's Red Robin Podcast Weekly, which is powered by 360 Chartered Accountants and Budget Ties Auto Centre. Make sure you check out the Rugby League Record Keepers Club. It's a fantastic resource and they deserve your support. But for now, just live, love, laugh and be happy.